You're listening to The Songwriter's Diary. On this episode, I'm speaking to Esther. Esther is a violinist and a mum. For some of our listeners who may not have heard of you, please tell us what you do and how you do it.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me, Makuka. I'm a violinist. That is my chosen instrument. And I studied a music degree at WinTech. And I've done a lot of freelance work, both in the classical world, but also in a lot of other genres.
So we actually studied music together.
It was awesome. It was a great time studying with you guys and having so many different people, of course, from different backgrounds and making lots of different music. It was fantastic.
Yeah, so I'd like to open the space up for you to tell us your story.
Yeah, well, I mean, being a violinist, of course, for a lot of violinists anyway, our background is classical. You know, you learn your classical pieces, your Mozart, your Beethoven from an early age. I was actually almost 9 years old when I started playing. This was after years of begging my parents to let me learn. I was just really enchanted by the instrument and the sound, and finally they let me get a violin and start lessons because they knew I would be committed enough to do all my grades and that sort of typical route. But
you
I
actually
did...
the first violinist that I've known of who actually wanted to play the violin.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's where my background differs from a lot of classical musicians. You know, I was not very, very young when I started, and it was something that I worked up towards. Both my parents are musicians, so I grew up with a lot of eclectic music, particularly sort of like folk music, that sort of thing. My mom is was a Bulgarian dance teacher in Hungary. And my dad is a classically trained pianist, but was often working in the sort of indie rock space in Australia. So I grew up hearing them play all sorts of weird instruments like the hammer dulcimer just all those sorts of things. So I was always surrounded by music and inspired by that, but somehow just drawn to the violin. Started doing all my grades and things like that, and I used to play in little chamber groups and that sort of thing, and I never did really anything outside of the classical space till much later on. I started a classical music degree at the University of Waikato at the age of 16. I had a very defined vision of what I was going to be doing, which was to be in the classical space and be in an orchestral type job in the future. And I played in a lot of orchestras in the Hamilton region. And it wasn't until I got into my second year of university when I started to go, I don't know if this is for me. I don't know if this is my calling. I loved music. I loved classical music. But I just didn't feel like I fitted in for some reason. And I decided to take a step back from study and just reevaluate a wee bit. And that's what led me to WinTech and completing my degree at WinTech.
Oh, so you started your degree at Waikato and then you completed it at WinTech.
That's true, yeah.
Ah, I didn't know that.
I mean, it was a very interesting time for me. I learned a lot and I met some amazing people. I learned under Lara Hall, who is a brilliant violinist, and she was a brilliant teacher to me. I guess I didn't have the drive. Like, I found a lot of my fellow students were very much going for like solo jobs or professional classical music roles. And for me, I started to feel like I didn't have the drive to be in that kind of space. And I was much more drawn to composition and sort of following a lot of my folk roots as well. And I didn't feel like I fitted in. And that was no fault of anybody. It was just the space was very classical dominated. And that wasn't the space I was growing. So, yeah, I really had to just draw back, go, what is it that I want to get out of music? And why am I doing this, you know, instead of just going all in, because that was what was expected of a classical musician.
Would you say that the WinTech degree was more like experimental compared to the classical one?
In my experience, yes, for sure. Maybe because I wasn't really sure what my calling was or what my niche was. And to this day, I still am finding that. But perhaps if you were at the degree at Waikato and you were very set on what your niche was, it would work. But for me, I was feeling very much, because I wasn't defined in that, I was being pushed into that classical mold, and that's not what I was fitting into. Whereas at WinTech, because you had such a varied course and there was a lot of emphasis on the academic work as well as the, the performance work, that helped me to well-round my skills much more and explore many more possibilities as well, with the help of my fellow students and tutors who had very different musical backgrounds to me rather than one musical background.
I never knew that.
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I've been really private about my musical background and what I've done for a long time. And I think that I've sort of become more open about it recently because I realized that there's maybe people who are like me out there.
Yes.
So it's important to talk about these things, because maybe I would have appreciated somebody like me being around and being sort of a mentoral guide. And I started to find that much more at WinTech. Jeremy Mayle was a huge influence on me because he came from a classical background also. He's a classically trained pianist, and he can correct me if I'm wrong on that one, but, he has a very eclectic skill base now. But he went through, that sort of same background of being classically trained. So that was a huge influence to me to go, oh, I can actually push the boundaries and use my classical skills in another type of space.
It's shocking that I didn't know all of this, because we were flatmates.
I know, but we lived together. How did this happen?
Oh my goodness. You're right. Like, when I first started learning music, I started learning classical piano. And because I started at such a late age, I knew that I wouldn't be a classical pianist, because I didn't have the experience and also the technical skills to make it a profession. And so before I went to WinTech, I thought to myself, well, I know I want to be a musician. I want to do something in the music space, but I don't know what it is. And I knew I could write songs and I could play piano fairly okay. But it wasn't until went to WinTech when I saw that, oh, okay, there are other options. Like, you could be a sound designer, you could compose music for TV, film. The possibilities are endless. And that's one thing that I also felt like I took from it. Like, it's not just one thing. Like, you're not just going to be a pianist or a songwriter. There are other avenues that you could explore as well.
That's what I loved about the WinTech course, was it was actually preparing you for the music industry as a whole, and was giving some really useful starting skills to get out into the industry. And I had no idea. I had no idea what was possible. And in a way, I was kind of like sad that I didn't start my degree there from the beginning, because I really did enjoy doing the audio technology. And I remember we did a sound design paper together.
Yes.
And that was great fun. It was just
so fun.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. We had to do sound design for a demo.
Video game. And then it was like a film demo of some sort as well.
Yeah, yeah. I still have that on, we still have the Google Doc.
Right. I saw that today. I had a look and I was like, oh my God, what is this? Like, I'm always too scared to open it to go, oh gosh, was it really as good as we thought it was?
Like, no, it's actually very good.
Yeah, we did some weird stuff. That was good fun.
Yeah, and I remember we both had never done something like that before. Mm-hmm. We both didn't know what we were doing.
But we were dedicated enough, you know.
Yes.
I think both being perfectionist as well really helped.
Yeah.
And maybe sometimes, because you don't have that sort of background, you can lend a different ear to that exactly. kind of space, you know, yeah. and I kind of discovered that a little bit about myself, you know, I what you mentioned before about feeling like you don't have the technical skill, that really resonated with me because I felt like that in the classical space, being also a fairly late starter, you know, at 9, I was a late starter to the classical space. And then yeah. on the other hand, when I joined WinTech, I just realized, oh my goodness, I'm totally out of my depth with the knowledge of not just the audio technology space, but also even like theory and things like that, because I'd only done theory in the classical sense and I didn't have understanding of, you know, all these chordal progressions that were in, you know, jazz music and soul. And I just had no idea. So I felt so torn between it all, but it was a really brilliant experience to try and meld all of my knowledge into one sort of my own identity, you know?
Yeah. I hope you also saw how amazing of a violinist you are as well.
Thank you. Thank you. I think it is really hard to see your own achievement a lot of the time. I think that's one of my biggest flaws as a musician. I'm terribly self-critical. And it, often that can be really inhibiting because, I mean, for example, at the moment I'm recording some tracks for my dad who lives in Australia, and he's mixing and mastering and producing this album for somebody. And so he asked me to do some tracks for him remotely. And I sat down to record the other day. I literally deleted every single track I recorded. And then at the end of the day, I was like, I'm so stupid. Why did I do that? Like, I should have just slept on it and gone back and gone, okay, this is usable and this isn't, but it's okay. And I think that that's something I'm still learning for sure.
I don't know about you, but for me, especially with songwriting, and in my head, I know what I want it to sound like and to feel like. And when I record something and it doesn't sound or feel like that, I think this is crap. I have to delete it. I have to start again. But I forget that it's kind of a journey, and you sort of, as I keep recording and as I keep writing, that's how I'm going to get to the whatever is in my head. And if I keep deleting things, I am forcing myself to start again every time I go back and record something. And I'm trying my best to get over doing that.
It's a constant journey, but you're so right. The one thing I started doing recently, and I shared a wee track on my Instagram that I just started, but I started
amazing,
improvising.
By the way.
Thank you. Literally, that was just improvisation on the fly at the beginning of a rehearsal. And I just popped it through a quick post, you know, just to add a little bit of reverb and things like that to make it sound pretty. But just starting to improvise at the beginning of each practice to get yourself into a really good headspace to make music, because a lot of what I do is, you know, orchestral or things like that, where I'm looking at sheet music and I'm aiming for perfectionism because you're reading a note and you have to play what's there. So this is a way to sort of bring yourself down to that raw level of creating music. And there's no expectation. That's the biggest thing. Because most of what we do is to go in with an expectation, whether it's in here or it's on a piece of paper. So that's been my sort of way of getting through to that raw, natural headspace in music. There is magic in being accurate and being technically accomplished, but you also have to have, you know, you've got to have that imperfectionism. I don't even know if that's a word, but you just need to have that sort of raw element. Otherwise, you know, what can people connect to? But at least for me, that's what, when I listen to musicians, I want to hear their soul. And then I've been hearing this and then not even striving for that myself. So it's changing expectations. I mean, for myself, I've had a lot of different musical experiences. A lot of my freelance work is, you know, being playing for musicals. You know, I was playing in Hamilton Operatic as the pit orchestra. You know, for a few schools that were playing productions, you know, other at the Gardens Festival, I've done a few gigs as well. And it's always reading somebody else's music, somebody else's work. So in those spaces, I'm being a professional and I'm being accurate and I'm creating what they want me to create. And so I have to divide my headspace. And I guess that is being a professional musician in the sense of, you know, what is the space demanding of you and what is the expectation, and dividing that and making sure that you're not carrying it over. Like in my personal writing, I was carrying so much of that professional expectation and going, this, I need to apply this to my own work, when actually I needed to separate that. It sounds really deep when I say it, but it's really not. But
I mean, it's not, but it also is.
Yeah.
It's really nice unpacking all of these things with another musician, because sometimes you think you just have these feelings, like, and no one else does. Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly, like, that's what I've been feeling lately. Like, you know, I had a big cry the other day because, you know, you asked me to come on this show, and I said to my partner, like, I feel like such a fraud. Like,
what?
Why am I being asked to talk about music? Like, really, what am I in the scheme of things? But actually, I feel like so many of us experience that, probably up to the highest level of being a musician in your industry, is that because there's always room to grow and there's always room to get better at what you do. So I think you're always going to feel like you haven't reached that. When actually I look back and I think I've accomplished a lot, and I should be proud of that. And now I'm just trying to find where my space is and what my musical identity is. And that's okay.
Yeah. And you know what? I felt the same when I was thinking of starting this podcast. I was like, who the hell am I? Like,
you're so like, brilliant, Makuka. I love it. You're very humble. I've always admired that about you.
No, but seriously, because I have an EP out, which, you know, once I released it, I got really sick and just depressed. Yes. And so I just did that, put it out in the universe, and didn't do any work after that.
Yes.
And now I want to do this podcast, and it's like, well, some of the things that were going on in my head is like, I don't have the experience and I'm not, you know, good at what I do yet, or I'm where I want to be. But then I also thought to myself, well, I've been making music, whether it's like publicly or just by myself, I've been.
And even, you know, making music personally is still progress.
Yeah.
Even though
it's
not public and people aren't seeing it, you're still progressing, right? And that's so valid.
Yeah. And I asked myself, like, okay, what am I doing right now? And it's like, well, I'm like getting vocal lessons and I'm like busting my ass at that. That's doing something. I'm consciously always, you know, thinking about what I want my next EP to be about, and you know, what I want the artwork to be like, what I want the video to be like. I'm constantly doing that, and I'm constantly having conversations like this with, you know, different musicians and different people. And I was like, no, I am doing something. And I spent 3-4 years of my life studying music, so that is something. You know, one of my other friends as well, who makes music, was saying, well, I feel like I haven't done anything when I asked her to come on the podcast. And I said to her, well, like, whether or not you take a 5-year break or a 2-year break, you still are a musician. And
you never that lose break, that.
Exactly. And that break is valid because you're experiencing life. You're at some point, I think, for most musicians or most music makers, at some point you always go back to music. No matter how long you stop or like you give up on it, you always go back in some way or another. It could be just playing, you know, music for your family, your friends, or it could be, you know, making an album or freelancing. But we still go back to it, and that having those breaks, they're still valid. It doesn't make you any less of a musician.
Yeah, I really resonate with that. I mean, you mentioned that I'm a mom as well at the beginning. And that has been my thing recently. My son is now, he's almost 18 months. And during that time, like being pregnant, having a baby in lockdown last year, and then, I mean, this whole past couple of years with COVID and things, like, it's been a really mentally exhausting time, and also time to just live and focus on those important things. And for me, that has been growing my family, and it's been putting my time into my son. And music has taken the bank bench, essentially. So, yeah, that's been hard, but also I know that it's always there. And I'm coming back to it gradually because, I mean, that first year of parenthood is just like a complete blur. Yeah. so many sleepless nights and so much, like, it's very emotionally, like, you invest so much emotionally, especially with the first child where you're just learning how to be a parent. It's certainly been a transformative experience, and I'm loving coming back into my music now. Now that I've grown as a person, I really feel like a woman now, you know. I've really grown up. So here we are. Arising from the ashes. I've loved sharing music with my son. It hasn't been in the same sense that I've approached music previously. I sang to him a lot when I really was I would find it hard to sing in front of people previously, and now we're in the middle of the park and I sing him silly songs, and he loves it. He thinks I'm the best, so who cares what anybody else thinks. And he really doesn't like me playing violin that much, which is hilarious. But he is obsessed with the guitar and the piano, so we do that a lot. So here we are, growing other musical skills.
Oh, that's amazing. So what's your practice routine like? And obviously it's probably changed drastically because you now have a son. I would imagine he has his own sleep routine and...
Yeah, so it didn't really exist probably until he turned about a year old. So I'm still at home with him. I actually have a few violin students that I teach throughout the week, and we're very lucky to have some great grandparents around the corner who mind my son while I do that. So that gives me some structure to the week. And he recently has a much more defined routine during the day. He's old enough for that now, so it gives me the time, like in the middle of the day, where I can I do a lot of mental practice because the violin is very loud and I don't have a soundproof space yet to practice. So for me, I listen to a lot of recordings. I play in a local orchestra, the Hutt Valley Orchestra, who is conducted by the brilliant Mark Carter, who is the sub-principal trumpet for the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra. It's a very high standard. So for me, it's important to practice for those rehearsals. But, you know, sometimes it just doesn't happen. And often I go days without practicing, which is so different to how I was before. You know, I was practicing every single day for many hours often when I was, particularly when I was studying. And I just had to learn that that was the expectation, you know. And for me, I aim to practice at the moment 2 times a week. That is my, if I aim to do that, if I do more, I'm happy. I tried to do every day at one point, and then I just disappointed myself because it just doesn't happen always, and that's life. But it's all about making it effective when you do practice, you know. For me, I don't play through with my orchestral music. I don't play through the whole piece. I go through and I go, what needs my attention? So I have to be very, very concise and wise with my time management. And also acknowledging that this won't last forever. My son won't be this young forever. And soon he's not going to want to hang out with me all the time. So, you know, more time will come. More time will come. No, but at the same time, I think it is also important to prioritize time, you know, for I have to prioritize it, otherwise it doesn't happen. So like I said, you know, setting times throughout the week where I can practice and things. Having rehearsals to go to helps. I can do a lot of things in the evening now, so that's my time for me. You know, I go to the gym or I have rehearsals with other people. And that's been really enjoyable. But yeah, it's also hard for me because I actually moved cities a few months before my son was born. And Hamilton was a great place to make music. I mean, most of my musical connections are in Hamilton. I was there when we moved to New Zealand when I was 11. And so when I started to really get into the music space about 14, 15, all of those relationships and that network that I had built paid off as I got into my 20s. And I almost didn't have to work hard for gigs. I didn't have to work hard for recommendations from people because I already had worked for that and I'd already built that up. And now I'm in a space where I'm in Wellington and I don't know people. I know a handful of musicians and I don't know what the space is. I don't know how to get myself out there. And I'm actually having to start to go, I need to put myself out there. I can't expect things to come to me. I can't expect to get an email to go, hey, come play for this, you know. And that's hard when I'm also going through the experience of not having the time and not having the availability that I used to. So it's certainly been challenging, but it's also good. It's good to go through that growth and realize that I need to put my voice out there.
Yeah. And also, please share more music because you share.
I want to.
yeah, please do. Because, you know, a lot of us who don't play the violin, like the violin, I've tried like just going like this and like, it just sounded crap. Like, I just don't understand how you can play a C. Like, like how it sounds so perfect and smooth. It's actually very hard to do.
It's a really difficult instrument. Like, honestly, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I've worked my ass off to sound fairly decent, like, for sure.
More than decent.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things that I've sort of come to terms with recently and gone, I actually need to start sharing what I do a bit more because I've been so withdrawn about sharing my stuff out of fear often. What I do is like my own personal compositions are quite like I feel like they're different. I feel like it's not what people expect. So I guess I have a bit of fear in that because I'm like, will people understand what I'm doing? And for me, I have a lot of influences, you know, my mum being Hungarian and having a lot of that Hungarian folk music growing up. But the way I play Hungarian folk music is my own interpretation. I didn't grow up there, so I'm never going to play like those brilliant folk musicians do who have it in their blood. But at the same time, that flavor is always in the music that I write. And I should hold on to that and be proud of that, be proud of my heritage, even though my heritage is not as strong as some people who are Hungarian. So, I need to do more of that. And also, I do weird stuff. Like, I like to experiment with the post-production or do looping. Like, one of my big things when I was studying was doing my looping and performing live. Yeah.
Not everyone will like what you're doing. There's, like, a group of people who will enjoy it. There'll be a group of people who won't understand it, but still do it.
Yeah.
Because, we know what the conventional violinist sort of sounds like. And I think that it's always exciting when someone else comes up with something that's different or maybe introduces you to a different way of playing violin.
Yeah, I'm excited to be writing more, and I think adding some more order to the madness that's in my head, you know, like it, sometimes you have all these crazy ideas and it's really hard to be able to project it. Like you said, you know, you have a vision in your head for a song or for how, what sound you want to create. And it's not always that easy. Like it's easy to come up to, with ideas, but to actually do something with it is hard. So that's where the hard work comes in for me now, is actually going, I have all this madness in my head. Let's actually start to make something of it. And I mean, it's really won me some great opportunities in Hamilton. Like I played with Dr. Mesmer's Private Army for a while, did a few gigs, recorded a couple of albums and things like that. Like that's all ambient music that we would improvise on the fly, and it was always different. And for me, that was an amazing opportunity to be trusted and heard, because that was like the most raw state of creating music for me. But also for them knowing that I was able to do that because I'm not so bound by my classical background. So you know, that has been really an honor. Like I was very honored by that experience because it made me think, oh, actually there is something valuable about what I bring to the table.
Yes. Yes. Musicians who maybe have never freelanced before, are there a lot of freelance of gigs in the violin world?
There are,
I guess, what's available.
Ah, yeah, I see what you're saying. So on one hand, I can't give you a great example of what freelancing as a violinist is like because I never did music as a full-time career. So I can understand how challenging that is if you are a full-time musician. Like I didn't have to rely to pay on all my bills with music, which made it much easier. And I could pick and choose what fitted with my schedule. So I got that experience. In saying that, like I didn't ever travel far for my gigs, but I built up my reputation with the Operatic Society. You know, when we had festivals on, like the Hamilton Gardens Festival, I usually do a couple of paid gigs during that festival every year. I know that there's a lot of work available recording albums because, you know, there's string layers even in music that you wouldn't even think had strings in it, but would, you know, being a session musician essentially, which I've only done a couple of those sorts of jobs, but there's certainly work out there. My biggest, I guess, advice for people who are like a classical musician essentially is to build up your network outside of the classical sphere, because actually giving those sorts of layers to other music will give you a lot of work. So, and like I've worked in wedding industry, like I've done a wedding recently. I've got another couple of weddings coming up in the new year. So that sort of work is always around, but I think it's just being able to have skills in multiple fields, and then you actually fill up your plate with a lot of things very quickly. So that's how I've done it, you know, building networks and doing lots of different things.
So if people did want to get in contact with you for like collaborations, are you open to that?
100%. My biggest joy really over the last few years has been playing with other people. I love playing live, and I'm getting into the more recording, finding my skills in that area as well. I've got an Instagram now. So I'm at I_M_Esti. People can message me on there. Let's make music. Let's do something. So yeah, totally open to that.
So you were listening to The Songwriter's Diary. Special thanks to Esther for sharing her music journey today. Please enjoy A Movement from the Catalan Suite by Esther. Peace and love, love and light, Wakuka.